words appear. This film was made possible by Southern Poverty Law Center supporters who share a commitment to social justice. Credits scroll. National sponsor, Willow Springs Foundation. Additional credits scroll. Dedicated to the memory of Carl Joseph Walker Hoover, who hanged himself on April 6, 2009, after school bullies repeatedly taunted him as gay. He was 11 years old. A photo of a smiling, milk chocolate-skinned boy in a football uniform. Portions of this film were reenacted in accordance with eyewitness testimony and court transcripts. People sit around a table, eating with chopsticks. A sandy-haired man smiles. He stands and answers the phone.
Hello?
Two women and a young man with reddish hair focus on the man.
They're back.
The group leaps up and gathers briefcases and coats.
My lawyer said to me right out, this is either really good or really bad. Juries don't make quick decisions unless it's unanimous.
We dropped everything, went back to the court, and I don't want to tell you, the excitement was palpable.
A woman with brown hair swallows. Jurors file in past a marshal.
It was hard to say what was going to happen. We went into closing arguments uncertain. To tell you the truth, we were doing something that had never been done before.
Has the jury reached a verdict?
Yes, Your Honor.
When the verdict was announced, inside my heart was just beating so fast.
My lawyer informed all of us that we couldn't respond to the verdict. Don't show any emotions, don't be excited, don't be upset, whatever it is.
He believed that the rules that said he shouldn't be discriminated against should be honored, and he carried that sense of wrong with him, and he wanted to do something about it.
Words appear. The Southern Poverty Law Center presents a teaching tolerance film, Bullied, a Bill Brummel Productions documentary, associate producer Jamie Hebert, composer Jamie Dunlap, directors of photography John Rode, Jason Newfield, editor Dan Wolfmayer, executive producer Richard Cohen, produced and written by Bill Brummel, directed by Bill Brummel, Jeffrey Sharp. In a school auditorium.
The first time I ever told anyone I was gay, it was my grandmother. I spent a lot of weekends at my grandmother's house, just her and I. We'd watch TV, we would hang out, we'd eat ice cream, that sort of thing. And when I was 7, my uncle was coming to visit quite a bit in the summer, and my uncle had went away, and he basically was the only person in my family that went away and made money, and he came back and he always had a Cadillac. As a kid, I absolutely loved his Cadillac, and it was kind of a strange obsession where I would go and play with the buttons, I would take naps in the back seat of the Cadillac. So my uncle had come to visit, him and his partner, my uncle was gay, and he had left, and I was hanging out with my grandmother in her bedroom, and we were watching TV. And I said, Grandma, I want to tell you something. And she said, yes. I said, I'm a homosexual. I probably couldn't even pronounce the word, to be honest. And she just looked at me and smiled and said, honey, you don't have to be gay to have a Cadillac.
A photo of a smiling young man with light brown hair. Narrated by Jane Lynch.
In the late 1980s, Jamie Nabuzny was in middle school, seemingly leading the life of a typical American teenager.
Words appear, Jamie Nabuzny.
My childhood was pretty good overall. My family did have some problems, but I always knew that my parents loved me and cared about me and I was taken care of.
A photo of a woman and man with three small boys dressed alike.
The Nabuzny family lived in a small Wisconsin town on the banks of Lake Superior.
Nina Buxbaum.
I describe Ashland as being as far as you can go in Wisconsin without falling into the lake.
Former Ashland High School teacher.
It is, in the summer, a wonderful, beautiful spot. And in the winter, it's 5 feet of snow and cold.
Jamie kept his sexual orientation a secret from his parents and friends until one day in the seventh grade.
Carol Rosen, Jamie's mother.
Well, I think he just said, you know, Mom, I'm gay. I don't think I was that shocked.
And my mom was, you know, she was crying and she said, I already knew and it doesn't matter, I love you.
I think I knew from the time Jamie was like 5 that he was gay. I think a mother knows that, you know? So I just thought, okay, if this is what he says he's gay, then we need to deal with it and, you know, I just need to start learning some more about it.
My dad took a while to accept that I was gay, and I think one of the things that kind of happened is that eventually my harassment became the bigger issue in our lives, bigger than my sexuality, and as a parent, his job was to protect me and to make sure that I was safe.
A brick building, Ashland Middle School, in a classroom.
All right, everybody, settle down.
Jamie was not out to his friends, but many classmates at Ashland Middle School saw him as gay. That was enough for some campus bullies.
Hey, homo.
It started with words.
I just know that it hurt a lot to hear those words on a daily basis. People calling me queer, fag, homo, saying really disgusting things about sex or something like that.
A taller boy shoves Jamie's books.
Sorry, fag.
You know, yes, I'm gay, but at the same time, I'm not this horrible person that they think I am.
Kids get harassed for all kinds of reasons. They're too fat. They're too thin. They're too tall. They are too smart. They're too dumb. Gays and lesbians are picked on.
The harassment soon turned physical.
In a hallway, Jamie is shoved against the lockers.
When I was walking down the hallway, I'd have things thrown at me. I'd be kicked.
How's that feel, mama?
Punched.
Queer.
Spit on.
Jamie complained to middle school principal Mary Podlesny.
In the beginning, the principal told me that she would take care of it, she would handle the problem.
I'm gonna try and take care of things.
But to my knowledge, she never did anything.
Whenever we complained, they said that they would deal with it, they would get to the bottom of it, and they would take care of the kids that were, you know, calling him names or tripping him or doing whatever they were doing.
A photo of a solemn-faced Jamie alone on a sofa.
The constant bullying took an emotional toll.
A lot of times when I'd come home from school, especially after a really bad day, I would go to my room and I would shut the door and I wouldn't come out.
Jamie drops his backpack.
And sometimes I would just cry because that was the only place that I could actually show my emotions. I never wanted to do that at school. Somehow, part of me always knew that I didn't deserve what was happening to me. But after enough time and enough harassment, you start wondering what did I do to deserve this and what is wrong with me?
In the auditorium.
I went home and felt completely helpless. When you're in seventh grade, it's an eternity until you're gonna graduate high school and be able to leave. And I was gonna be stuck with these kids for all of that time. And there was no way that I could face going to school every day for the rest of my junior high and high school career. And I ended up going into my bathroom, taking a whole bunch of pills, and going to sleep, hoping that I would not wake up again because I did not want to go back to school. After I took the pills, I actually really got kind of scared as I was lying in bed, and I realized I didn't want to die. And I thought maybe if I went and told my mom, maybe I'd get some help finally, and maybe the harassment would somehow stop.
Terrified, Jamie's mom rushed him to the hospital.
It was just hard for me to believe that a 12, 13, 14-year-old kid would try to commit suicide.
Jamie's mother sits in a hallway.
In the emergency room, doctors pump Jamie's stomach.
She covers her mouth.
Later, he was admitted to a psychiatric unit.
I felt helpless. I couldn't do anything for him. I was trying. You know, we were trying. We were calling the school. We were doing what we thought we should do as parents to deal with all these things, and nothing was happening, and he felt that frustrated that he tried to commit suicide. That was really hard.
Reluctantly, Jamie returned to Ashland Middle School in the eighth grade.
Me and my brother had gotten to school early, and we had to use the restroom.
Hey, look, it's the queers.
Hey, homos.
We ended up going in there, and there was a couple of boys in the bathroom already. They started calling us names and pushing us. One of them ended up pushing me really hard against the bathroom stall, and the other kid did the same thing to my brother. And they hit us a couple of times.
The three shoved Jamie back and forth between them. They run off, in the principal's office.
Jamie's mother immediately demanded a meeting with Principal Podlesny. Also present were several bullies and Mary Jane Grandy, mother of one of the bullies.
And Mrs. Podlesny said that boys will be boys, and that if Jamie was going to act so openly gay, he had to expect this stuff to happen to him. I know I was shocked that she would say something like that about, you know, him, because I knew what she was saying was wrong.
Too often, what we see...
David Buckle.
...is the response is that there's something about the target. Maybe you shouldn't be so openly gay.
Former Lambda legal attorney.
It was said to Jamie Nabuzny and thousands of others. And what could be the worst possible message in the world for someone attacked and harassed because of who they're perceived to be?
Not one of the bullies was punished.
I think if a school district or a school doesn't address harassment...
Liz Woodworth.
...or bullying...
Teacher, Ashland High School.
...it's giving a wink and a nod and sending the message that that behavior's okay. And any time that you send a signal that the behavior's okay, it will escalate.
That's exactly what happened later in the year.
In a science class, the students sit at octagonal tables with microscopes.
Okay, listen, I'll be back in 5 minutes. You guys keep going on chapter 3.
Jamie sits next to a larger, blonde-haired student.
Hey, pretty boy.
Did you have fun last night with your boyfriend?
You guys make out?
Had a little make-out scene.
The two boys started harassing me, and they started touching my legs and telling me, you know, that you like it and stuff, and I kept pushing them away. And then eventually I tried to get away from them, and they pushed me to the ground.
The blonde pushes Jamie.
One of them got on top of me and were just continuing to touch me and being vulgar, I guess. I eventually got him off of me, and I was very upset, obviously. I ran to the principal's office. And I asked to see her, and I explained what had happened.
A lone figure walks a hall.
According to Jamie, Principal Podlesny again responded by saying, "Boys will be boys."
In the auditorium.
So I thought high school would be different. After all, the kids that are harassing me are now freshmen. Maybe I would just blend in. Maybe people would forget about the fact that I was gay, and they'd leave me alone.
At Ashland High School.
But just weeks into his freshman year at Ashland High School, Jamie discovered little had changed.
A taller Jamie enters a bathroom and faces the urinal.
You know, I just tried to ignore them and continued to use the restroom.
Well, look who's here.
And when I did that, I felt somebody's knee push into the back of my knee. And I ended up falling forward into the urinal, and one of the other kids who was standing at one of the other urinals turned and started to pee on me. I was really angry, I was upset, and I thought, it's starting all over again now in high school.
Although only a handful of students bullied Jamie, many others stood by without speaking up.
T.C. Largaspada.
I've often wondered about the kids who watched it happen, why they didn't say anything.
Social worker.
How they felt about what was going on. Were they afraid?
In the hallway.
Faced with bullying on a daily basis, Jamie devised ways to evade his harassers.
I'd get to school early. I'd go find a place to hide with all of my books, and I'd wait till the bell rang, and then I'd basically run from class to class to class, trying to get there as quick as I could. And I typically wait about 20 minutes or half an hour after school got let out so that activities were in progress, everybody else was gone, and I'd walk home.
Although the administration was largely ineffective at safeguarding Jamie, some faculty members tried to protect him.
Jamie was in my class, and he and I got along pretty well. And I remember at one point he asked if he could start eating lunch in my classroom. And it became very clear as he spent more time in my classroom that he was not comfortable in the cafeteria during lunch. He wasn't comfortable in the hallway.
Just in her second year of teaching, Ms. Woodworth said she reported the abuse to the administrator responsible for discipline.
I went to the assistant principal, Tom Blauert, and said, you know, this kid's really getting harassed. And his response was, well, what do you expect when you hit on the hockey team? And I think I countered with, well, what are we going to do? And I think that his response was, well, I'll take care of it. I'll talk to the kids. No, I do not believe that Jamie Nabuzny hit on the hockey team, but even if he had, that's not the point. You know, the point is we cannot allow students to be bullied or harassed or assaulted in our schools. We cannot tolerate that.
Seeing no way out in the middle of his freshman year, Jamie ran away.
A piece of paper rests on a pillow. Jamie's mother picks it up.
I found a note stating that he was leaving and not to try to find him, not to get a hold of him because he was not coming back. He was not going to go back to Ashland High School. It just wasn't working. He was being picked on too much. The violence, it was getting bad. Wow, I freaked out.
She drops the paper and rushes off.
Jamie and a friend hitchhiked 3 days to the closest big city.
I and my husband immediately figured that he would take off. He would go to Minneapolis, to the cities, because there was gay people there, and he felt that he could go there and find people that were like him. So we basically got some clothes together, packed some suitcases, and got in the car and headed to Minneapolis. We put posters all over in the cities, bus depots, telephone poles, bus stops. You know, we put up a lot of posters.
Posters hang along a chain link fence.
While we were in Minneapolis, we started seeing missing posters of me at coffee shops and at downtown Minneapolis on different posts, different places. And we just tried to avoid places where there was going to be missing posters for fear that somebody would recognize me.
Jamie eventually landed at a youth shelter where he connected with social worker T.C. Largaspada.
What I was struck with is that most of the time when I meet a kid, they're either running to something or away from their parents. And he wasn't doing either one of those things. He was really in danger.
He's here. Yeah.
That same day, Jamie's parents called the youth shelter, checking to see if he was there.
He's shaken.
They were really, really rattled. They were putting posters all over. They were pretty freaked out. And they were pretty desperate.
At the shelter.
Jamie. That was your parents on the phone. They want to come see you.
It's like, I'll talk to my parents, I'll do whatever, but I'm never, ever, ever, ever going back there. He was very clear that he loves them, but he was like, I don't think I'll make it if I go back there.
At the shelter, Jamie's mother is escorted in a hall. His mother rubs her neck.
Mom.
Oh my God, Jamie.
It was really emotional. We ended up just hugging and crying.
God, you're safe.
She was the heartbreaking part for me because, you know, this was her son. And she wasn't ready to let him go. He was way too young to let go. And you could see that she was torn between, can I keep him safe? And, you know, I just want him home.
So I told him, no matter what we have to do, if you come home with us, we will not send you back to the high school. Okay. We will get alternative education for you.
Okay.
Jamie agreed to come home.
After the meeting, I said, Jamie, you were 100% not going to go home. What happened? And he said, I can't see my mom like this. He loved his mom. And he was torn between saving his own life and not breaking his parents' heart. Nobody should have to make that decision.
A black and white photo of Jamie with his mother nearby.
Eventually, Jamie's parents realized they could not afford the cost of homeschooling.
Had there been any other option, we would have done it. And I had promised him when he came back after he ran away to Minneapolis that he would not have to go back to Ashland High School. And here I was, sending him back.
She presses her lips tightly.
But I had no choice. I just had no choice.
On a bus.
The abuse started again, almost immediately.
A student behind Jamie throws something. Jamie rocks forward. He touches the back of his head. Blood stains his fingers.
Jamie was being pushed to his limit.
It became clear that he was a lot more stressed, a lot more worried. and he was fretting a lot.
In the auditorium.
I ended up walking to school. I got my books and I found a place to hide. And I was studying, sitting cross-legged on the floor. Unfortunately, I didn't hide well enough that day.
Get up and fight, faggot.
He ended up kicking the books out of my hands. And so I went to pick the books up and he started kicking me. And he continued to kick me and kick me. While he was kicking me, the kid ended up saying that he would kill me if I said anything to anybody about what he'd done. The beating was so bad that I ended up having to have surgery and ended up in the hospital for 5 days.
I knew at that point I could never go back to school, that if I did, they were going to kill me. And so I made the decision to run away again. I ended up in Minneapolis, and I ended up, after about a week, calling my parents and saying, this is the deal. I'm not safe there anymore. You know that. Either you let me move here, you let me find a place that I'm going to be safe, that I can go back to school, or you don't see me until I turn 18.
A photo of Jamie and his dad.
I didn't want to let him move. I didn't want to lose him. You know, I felt like I was losing him. I wanted to see him graduate. I wanted him to be with us.
In the photo, Jamie looks down.
I was scared. I felt that if I didn't let him go and move to the cities, it was probably either he was going to commit suicide, and this time it would happen. Or he wouldn't go to school anymore. He'd quit going, or he'd run away. We had to let him go. And that was probably one of the hardest things I had to do as a mother, was to let him go. That really hurt.
But it wasn't easy for Jamie in Minneapolis. He was severely depressed and anxious.
Dennis Christian.
His experience was the result of feeling like his life was in danger.
Jamie's therapist.
That's the clinical criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. Something happens that you feel you're going to die. That was his experience.
At a community help center, Jamie met legal advocate Joni Thome.
So how often did this happen?
Just about every day.
One afternoon, he revealed all that had happened to him in Ashland schools.
Joni Thome.
During the course of Jamie telling the story, I had a lot of feelings. Some sadness, some frustration, and at the same time, some energy and passion for helping this young man. So
I think based on what Joni suggested Jamie consider a lawsuit. Jamie was skeptical of the idea, but he mentioned it to his family when he returned home for a visit.
Jamie, you gotta do this.
I was really surprised because my mom's response was, Jamie, this is something you have to do. That you're not the only kid that's been harassed in schools and that this will continue to happen and the schools will continue to look the other way and not do anything. And she really encouraged me to move forward and file the case.
I think what really struck me about Jamie was he was someone who felt very strongly about right and wrong, and he felt like rules mattered. And in the civil rights business, you look for folks like that because sometimes it's folks like that who are the ones who are willing to fight back.
At first, the trial court dismissed Jamie's case without even hearing it. But Jamie, represented by Lambda Legal, appealed. And in an historic decision, the United States Court of Appeals ruled that Jamie's case should go forward.
Newspaper clippings.
No court up until then had ever agreed that there could be a lawsuit brought by a student who'd suffered anti-gay violence in a public school. The revolution was this was the first court to do that. Never been done before. They said, you've got a lawsuit, you're going to get your day in court.
The lawsuit against the school district, middle school principal Podlesny, high school assistant principal Blauert, and high school principal Davis was big news.
On TV.
A young homosexual who was beaten and tormented by his classmates is suing his school district for failing to protect him.
I realized, I think for the first time, how big this case really was and how much it meant to so many people. I started getting a lot of letters of support from people from all over the country.
But some in Ashland were angry.
We started getting threats. We'd find things in the mailbox. Started getting threats on the telephone. They'd leave messages.
Who do you think you are suing the schools? That faggot son of yours deserved everything he got.
Courtroom dialogue from trial transcripts.
Finally, the trial began. David Springer from the renowned law firm Skadden Arps was Jamie's lead attorney.
Ladies and gentlemen, the evidence in this case will show that it's about a gay boy. My client, Jamie Nabosny, who grew up in Ashland, Wisconsin. He went to the high school and the middle school there. But virtually every day in those schools, he was subjected to harassment and abuse.
One of the first witnesses was Jamie's mother.
So, Mrs. Nabosny, did a meeting ever take place?
Yes, it did.
Where?
At the middle school.
And can you tell us what happened at that meeting?
Mrs. Podlesny asked the boys if they had called Jamie names or had done what he said they did in the bathroom, and they denied it.
Do you remember if she said anything else at that meeting?
She said that if Jamie was going to act so openly gay, he had to expect that kind of stuff to happen.
One of the trial's most dramatic moments came early when Roy Grandy, one of Jamie's principal attackers, testified. In jail on unrelated charges, he was escorted into the courtroom.
When Roy Grandy came into the courtroom, I was kind of surprised that he was there in his prison oranges. I really was. And everyone got really quiet.
Mr. Grandy, would it be fair to say that you and your friends picked on Jamie through the seventh and eighth grade?
Yes, sir.
And Roy was absolutely truthful about everything.
You remember tripping him?
Yes, sir.
Pushing him around?
Yes, sir.
Knocking books out of his hands?
Yes, sir.
Throwing things at him?
Yes, sir.
He got up on the witness stand and started to recite what had happened from his perspective.
Was in science class, and me and Jason were kind of picking on Jamie. And I think I do believe Jason blew in his ear, something to that effect.
You remember anything else that happened in that incident?
I think I put my hand on his rear end.
So you grabbed it?
Yeah.
To me, the most significant part of the trial, and in some ways the most difficult, was when Roy Grandy got up to testify on the stand and talk about all the things that he'd done to me. I guess having to remember a lot of that stuff, and then having mom.
He wipes his nose and rubs his eye.
Having my mom have to listen to him describe what he did to me over and over again was really hard.
Were you ever suspended from school for anything you did to Jamie?
No, sir.
Did Mr. Blauert or Mr. Davis ever criticize you for anything you ever did to Jamie?
No, sir.
Another key witness was Roy Grandy's mother, who recalled meeting with middle school principal Podlesny and Jamie's mother.
Now, Mrs. Grandy, do you recall the first time you ever met Jamie Nabosny?
Yes, I do. I was called into the office in regards to some words that were spoken in the middle school, and my son was laughing at them.
And was Mrs. Podlesny present?
Yes, she was.
It was a turning point for us. She was basically sitting there saying, "Dear jury, I'm on the other side here, but you know what Jamie and his parents are saying? Looks like it's true to me, because I was there."
Late on the trial's first day, Jamie took the stand.
You know, we had a lot of witnesses get up on that stand, but it was when Jamie got up, in particular, that you could have heard a pin drop. There was just absolute silence. Even when he wasn't talking, you just didn't hear the slightest sound.
I was sitting and had my books in my lap, and a couple bullies came up to me, and one of them told me he wanted to fight me. I informed him that I wouldn't fight with him, at which point he said, "Well, if you don't fight, I'm gonna kick the crap out of you." I went back to what I was doing and I ignored him, and he kicked my books out of my hand, and as I bent over to pick them up, he repeatedly kicked me until the lights in the library came on.
And did you tell anybody about this, Jamie?
Not right away, no.
Why not?
He threatened me.
And what did he say?
He said, "If you tell anybody, I'll kill you."
It was powerful to be able to see Jamie get his chance to let the truth come out and to have others hear it and judge it for themselves in the sort of the clear light of a courtroom where things had to be full and they had to be fair. And to watch him realize he was having his moment.
When school administrators took the stand, they denied any knowledge of what had happened to Jamie.
Ma'am, the question is, as you sit here today, do you have any present recollection of ever speaking with Mr. or Mrs. Nabosny?
No, I do not.
Do you have any present recollection of ever speaking with Jamie Nabosny?
No, I do not.
On some level, it was difficult to hear her just deny everything. But on another level, so much had come out up till that point, and all the truth had already been told, and I think she just looked ridiculous denying it all.
No.
No further questions, Your Honor.
We went into closing arguments uncertain. To tell you the truth, we were doing something that had never been done before. We were in a small town, very, very small town in the American Midwest. It was hard to say what was going to happen.
Ladies and gentlemen, no child deserves to go through what Jamie Nabosny had to go through. Every child deserves equal protection under the law. That is what this case is about. Now, as you go back to deliberate and you have that form of verdict before you, the question is, did these defendants intentionally discriminate? And I think that you will find from the evidence and from the law that the answer must be yes. Thank you.
The sandy-haired man stands and answers the phone.
Hello? They're back. Has the jury reached a verdict?
Yes, Your Honor.
A marshal delivers a paper from the jury foreman to the judge. Jamie presses his lips together.
Did any of the following defendants intentionally discriminate against the plaintiff on the basis of his gender or sexual orientation?
Jamie's mother was sitting next to me. She was holding my hand, and they had to read through, you know, each person.
Mary Podlesny.
Yes.
William Davis.
Yes.
Each time she squeezed harder and harder. I thought my knuckles were going to break.
Thomas Blauert.
Yes.
But we had the liability verdict. We'd won.
I was ecstatic and I wanted to scream and yell and grab Jamie. Inside, my heart was just beating so fast, and I was so happy, and I was so proud of him for doing what he did. Very proud. Still am.
As an attorney, a trial attorney, I found it so hard not to jump up. We knew with this verdict that we were going to be reaching schools across the country.
One of the best feelings I'd ever had, that this court had said not only was it wrong, but that these three people who were supposed to do their jobs and protect me didn't, and that they were responsible for that, was the best feeling in the world.
The school district itself was not found liable, but it quickly negotiated a monetary settlement. Jamie was awarded $900,000.
Newspaper clippings.
It was something that sent a message to, you know, school districts all over the country that this isn't okay. What happened here isn't okay. And not only is it not okay for humans to treat each other this way, but it's going to cost you a lot of money. And you need to do something about it.
There were thousands, millions of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender kids in public schools all over the country going through a similar hell. And they had a reason to have some more courage now. We had one young man in Texas who said he got the article the next morning. It was a picture of Jamie and a story about how this school district was going to owe almost $1 million. He put it up inside his locker, taped it up, and he said it gave him the strength to get through the day. There was that message that instantly went out to all these young folks of hope.
Because of his courage, Jamie was invited to Washington, D.C. to speak at a congressional subcommittee hearing on parents, schools, and values.
Jamie in front of the Capitol building.
Kudos to the brave young man who did the right thing and stood up for himself. Because in one young, brave man standing up, he maybe inadvertently stood up for millions of others. The other thing that happened from this is that our school district is a better place. Jamie did have a lot to do with it. You know, if somebody holds a mirror up and forces you to take a good hard look at yourself, you're going to come away changed.
In the school auditorium.
So a lot of people ask me, why did I do this? Why did I fight? And I'll tell you why. I fought back for all the kids who can't fight back. I get a lot of people contacting me on Facebook, kids that are being harassed, asking for help or advice. And I think the big lesson to be learned from all of this is that you have to fight back when something isn't right. It doesn't matter if you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or if you're harassed for any reason, you have a right to be protected in school and you have a right to have a safe education. I was a poor gay kid from northern Wisconsin, and I was able to stand up and say, harassment is wrong, beating me up and urinating on me is wrong, and I won. And if I can do that, anyone can do that. Thank you.
There's so much more that needs to be done.
Words appear. Most gay and lesbian students are still being harassed at schools every year. Usually, they do not report the incidents out of fear or because they believe school officials will not help them. Described by Audio Eyes. Description written by Terry Grossman. Narrated by Chris Snyder. Credits from the beginning of the film. Regional sponsors. Rosalie and Joyner Cartwright Jr. Foundation. Tom Stanley. Susan Carter. Countess Moira Charitable Foundation. Hermione and David Heller Foundation. Leibovitz Fund. Helen and Oliver Walcott. Funding Exchange. Caroline and Sigmund Schott Fund by Ann Croker and Richard Leeds. Catherine Gessner Nelson, John Nelson, Alex and Anna Nelson, Ellen H. and Malcolm Atterbury Jr. Foundation, Kaplan Foundation, Leichtag Family Foundation, the Purple Lady Barbara J. Meislin Fund, Maxwell Strawbridge Foundation. State sponsors, Beatty Family Foundation, CompuWare, Carl and Robin Harden, Carol Walter, Kathy and Bob Becker, Jerry and Joanna Cohen, Sandra Davidson, Dibner Charitable Trust of Massachusetts, Distracted Globe Foundation, Michael and Karen Jones, Charlie Kearns and Frank Ching, Penelope Kingman, Donna McMillan and Caroline Blazik, Moss Foundation, Patricia and Robert Plitt, Caroline Robinson, Patricia J.S. Simpson, Cyrus Berlino, Mickey and Cheryl Weinstein. End credits scroll. I'll Rise, performed by Ben Harper. Lyrics by Maya Angelou. Music by Ben Harper. Published by EMI Virgin Music, Inc. Guy Cole Unlimited, administered by EMI Virgin Music, Inc., ASCAP, courtesy of Virgin Records. Special thanks to Ben Harper, Maya Angelou, Red Light Management, Patrick Jordan, and Lindsay Brown. Narrated by Jane Lynch. Directed by Bill Brummel, Jeffrey Sharp. Produced and written by Bill Brummel. Executive producer Richard Cohen. SPLC consulting producers Leisha Brooks, Maureen Costello, Russell Estes, Wendy Villa. Editor Dan Wolfmayer. Directors of photography John Rode, Jason Newfield. Composer Jamie Dunlap. Associate producer Jamie Hebert. Title design Bill Rude. Colorist Dan Wolfmayer. Audio post-production. Sound design, Dee Dee Stengem. Recording mixer, Michael Klinger, Tree Falls Post. Production accountant, Andy Tiles. Producers thank those interviewed for this film. Jamie Nabuzny, Carol Rosin, Nina Buxbaum, David Buckle, Liz Woodworth, T.C. Largespada, Dennis Christian, Joni Thome, Corey Nabuzny, Travis Nabuzny, William Davis, Jesse Gilbertson, Lynn Gardner-Kleinke. Reenactment cast. Middle school Jamie Nabuzny, David Chandler. High school Jamie Nabuzny, Jason Collette. Carol Nabuzny, Kate Roxburgh. David Springer, Patrick Finnerty. Mary Podlesny, Ray Latt. Thomas Blauert, Eddie Pratt. High school Roy Grandy, Brendan McKnight. Mary Jane Grandy, Deborah Ramalia. Robert Nabuzny, David Parker. Corey Nabuzny, Jake Keller. T.C. Largespada, Linda Miller. Joni Thome, Andrea James. Liz Woodworth, Amy Billen, Judge, Mark Wenzel, Jury Foreman, Carol Almos, Bailiff, Gary Shaw, Deputy, Dave Johnson, Plaintiff Attorney, Jenna Banco, Defense Attorney, Kurt Sinclair, David Buckle, Michael Barco, William Davis, Mike Furick, Middle School Roy Grandy, Severon Polakowitz, English Teacher, Pogo Saito, Science Teacher, Kim Connolly, Middle School Bully, Dylan Gabriel, Middle School Bully, Taylor McDonald, Middle School Bully, Brian Taylor, High School Bully, Edgar Zatikian, High School Bully, Andrew Clements, Extras, Malcolm Arnsdorf, Lolly Boroff, Connor Brazier, Greg Brown, Veronica Brown, Abby Buckoff, Casey Buckoff, Brian Connolly, Jennifer Canonico, Nicholas Canonico, Andrew Demetrio, Colin Denham, Nicholas Denham, Javier Diaz, Alicia Hebert Elfelt, Noah Flores, Mimi Fortier, Kim Gatewood, Rachel George, Robbie Graber, Jason Hebert, Shannon Hill, Tyler Hill, Katie Hodges, Sophie Hollow, Ben Hytrek, Tara Hytrek, Cody Jers Allen, Kaylee Kailani, Summer Kailani, Daniel Carey, Kathleen Kersey, Sandra Kiesling, Eleanor Kotos, Robert Lipman, Nicole Loftus, Skylar McDonald, Artemisia Mazur Duggan, Katie Narbatas, Melissa Nystrom, Nicholas Nystrom, Ian Osborne, R. Sky Polkowitz, Jake Parker, Jana Ridley, Sonia Roma, Tiffany Rudolph, Alexander Russell, Marshall Sharp, Jeffrey Sharp, Holly Sherman, Irit Starr, Rhea Stenlick, Alexis Sutherland, Ashley Sutherland, Janelle Taylor, Christopher Troy, Ian Van Bieber, Mistelin Van Bieber, Andrew Vogt, Nick Von Sohn, Peter Voitko, Austin Wegunt, Nicole Whitehead, Alec Wigington. Casting, Susan Turner. Extras casting, Michelle Gabriel, Burbank casting. Studio teachers, Barbara Gannon, Sena Yee. Crew reenactments, First AC, Aaron Ives. Second AC, Second Camera Operator, Jamie Ryan Hines. Sound, Mickey Colton. Art Director, James W. Thompson Jr. Costume Designer, Marcel Shumley. Makeup Artist, Kat Elrod. Gaffer, Derek J. Voss. Key Grip, Will Demerit. Best Boy Grip, Max Spangler. Best Boy Electric, Cameron Bryant. Swing Grip, Adam Beffa. Swing Grip, Dave Muskiki. Electrician, Zach Wilcox. Costume Assistant, Jeanette Hita. Art Assistant, Joe Skiff. Production Assistant, Paul Smedile. Production Assistant, Kimberly Irving. Production Assistant, Jeff Larson. Stunt Coordinator, Sean Crowder. Stunt Assistant, Tammy Baird. Catering, A Chef For You Catering. Documentary Crew, Minnesota, Wisconsin. Steadicam Operator, Craig Peterschmidt. Sound, Jeff Deeth. Production Assistant, Steve Holm. Documentary Crew, San Francisco. Camera Operator, Kevin Brown. Steadicam Operator, Greg Merks. Sound, Peter Williams. PA System Sound, Naparwatch Shrishamarn. Gaffer, Arthur Aravina. Key Grip, Peter Burgess Smith. Grip, Nick Anthony. Assistant Camera PA, Jeff Lamb. Archival images provided by Rita Reed, Ashland Daily Press, Associated Press, Carol Rosen, Jamie Nabuzny, Jean-Nicolas Treder Collection, University of Minnesota Libraries, NBC News Archives, Star Tribune, Minneapolis. Transcription services, word of mouth. Special thanks to the students and staff of Raoul Wallenberg Traditional High School, San Francisco, California, Cheryl Foster, John Acheson, Lena Rodriguez. Special thanks to Washburn High School, Washburn, Wisconsin, Sue Masterson, Peggy Ryan, Brad Dreyer. Special thanks to Marshall Fundamental Secondary School, Pasadena, California, Keith Derrick, Sandra Rizzo, David Ramirez. Producers wish to thank ACLU, Chris Hampton, David Buckle, City of Minneapolis Permits Department, Dakota County Judicial Center, Hastings, Minnesota, Ulaunch Draper, Jean-Nicolas Treder Collection, University of Minnesota Libraries, LA Gay and Lesbian Center, Daryl Cummings and Cleo DeMarco, Lambda Legal, Lisa Hardaway, Alec Mappa, Eric Martinez, Outfront Minnesota, Pasadena Unified School District, Rita Reed, San Francisco Film Commission, San Francisco Unified School District, Skadden, Arps, Slate, Meager, and Flom, LLP and Affiliates, Chicago, the David Springer Family, Stuart Wade. Special thanks to GLSEN for its pioneering leadership in ensuring safe schools for all students. Special thanks to Jamie Nabuzny. For more information about this and other teaching tolerance films, please visit www.tolerance.org.